In the Koinonia Fireside Room this afternoon are Anita Hill and Janelle Bussard. Today's session number is 2000-2, and it's titled Claiming the Promise of Lesbian and Gay Christians, Claiming Competitive Relationships. Let's listen in.
A warning to the person in the media ministry office, and we'll start from there. I'm Anita Hill, and this is Janelle Bussard, my partner. And Emily Eastwood and Jan Bailey have joined us for this session. We're really pleased to have them with us. We are doing sessions this week about claiming the promise as lesbian and gay Christians, and today we're talking about claiming committed relationship. So to context that a little bit, I want to tell you about St. Paul Reformation Lutheran Church in St. Paul, Minnesota, where we are all members, and where I have had the privilege to serve on staff since 1983, working in a ministry called Wingspan, with and on behalf of gay and lesbian people, bisexual people, transgender people, and their families and friends. The congregation was first approached by a couple, part of that congregation in 83, asking for a blessing ceremony. They didn't call it marriage, and it was the first that we knew of such events that began at our church. Paul Tiedemann, who's the ordained pastor at the congregation with whom I serve, has put together a book, a little booklet of services of blessing of relationships, and on the back table there's a little green order form that you could, if you wish to get hold of this document, you can do so by writing it in. This thing predates this, which is just about a month old and available to us. And what I'm going to do first is do some contexting about services of blessing, about how we understand them, why we do them. The booklet has that information in it, as well as the information about four different services that happened at our congregational setting, so you can have that. So Paul Tiedemann has put together this piece about theological understandings of services of blessing of relationship. And out of it, he's building on the creation stories and looking particularly at Genesis 2, where we're finding information about God intending the whole of creation to be relational, that our God is a relational God, that perhaps even in a process theology sense, that God was lonely and created humanity in terms of having someone with whom to relate, and created that first creature, that Adam, which literally means earth creature. It doesn't mean it created a man named Adam, as we usually think of it, but the Hebrew term Adam, meaning an earth creature, and then created another, so that Adam would not be lonely either, and also would be called into relationship. So it's out of that sense that we understand that all of us as human beings are called into relationship, and that would include people of opposite gender, men and women called into relationship, men and men called into relationship, women and women called into relationship in our context. The services that we've held have not been all that many in our congregation. We have calls for them from time to time. Primarily, we do them only when there is one member, one person in the couple is a member of the congregation, primarily, or both of them are members, so it's not, for the most part, a general service provided to the gay community at large, but one that is coming out of the context of Christian community. And it is when a couple recognizes the blessing of God in their own relationship and they wish to make that blessing public and to invoke God's continued blessing and to seek the support of their family and their community, that they gather in context of a worship service to do such a blessing ceremony. Sometimes we've talked at our congregational setting that it might make sense for us in the church to help do some separation of church and state when it comes to any kind of solemnization of a couple's relationship, be that heterosexual marriage, which is one of the probably clearest places where we have church and state all wadded together in our country. And there are some countries in the Netherlands where they have those things separate, where if you wish to be married legally, you go to some agent of the state who marries you legally in a brief ceremony of some sort. And if you wish to have the blessing of God and the community around you in Christian context involved in such blessing, then you go to the church for a separate ceremony. And we've talked about for a time what would begin to happen if clergy in our churches would say to couples, if you wish to be married in the eyes of the state, go to the state. if you want to seek God's blessing and celebrate God's blessing that you already experience in your relationship, then come to the church for blessing. We've not moved to that step yet. We're still doing heterosexual marriages and signing the documents for them at our church, but that's something that we've been exploring a bit. We have adapted from the Lutheran Book of Worship Occasional Services book on their general service of blessing, and usually have in the beginning of the services that we conduct at our congregation an adaptation of one of those blessing prayers, and I thought I would do that, and then we'll turn to story. Blessed are you, O God, creator of the universe. You have made the whole earth for your glory. All creation praises you. We lift our voices to join the songs of heaven and earth, of things seen and unseen. You stretched out the heavens like a curtain. You divided the day from the night. You appointed times and seasons for work and rest, for tearing down and building up. You created people in your image and blessed them through all generations, guiding them in life and in death. Abraham and Sarah, Moses and Miriam, Ruth and Naomi, Jonathan and David, Isaiah and all the prophets, Mary, the mother of Jesus, Peter, James, and John, Martha, Mary Magdalene, Paul, Lydia, and all the apostles, and all the saints and witnesses in your church in ages past, in whom your spirit spoke and moved. Then the prayer continues. Be with us now and bless us as we set apart the relationship of this couple to your glory and the well-being of all people. Grant us grace to know your loving purpose in all things. My voice is given.
Give us joy in your love and lead us to full ways of building up the people of God. Through your Son, Jesus Christ, our Redeemer, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen. That was pretty much right at the beginning of our service. Mm-hmm. Not word for word, but pretty close.
And if you'll begin.
I think that would be a good idea.
I'm going to track some more.
Okay. I'm Emily, and this is?
I'm Jane.
And don't worry, as Jan always says, we always remember our names when we commit not to remember yours. So you may always ask us what our names are, and we will not be offended.
Say them again.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Jan.
We've been together now since 1988, living together since 1989. We're sort of steeped in Lutheran tradition. Both of us claim to be genetic Lutherans. So I got mine only from my mother's side. My dad gave it from a good neighborhood. He joined the Lutheran church as a teenager, actually, and met my mother at Luther League, and that was that. My uncle was a bishop in the LCA, the only bishop that the Texas Louisiana Synod ever had. Yes, I am from Texas, and a transplant to Minnesota. We met in 1986 and fell in love with each other. I don't believe that we intended to, but we did. Both of us have been in previous relationships, of which I will say for myself I'm not proud, but I have yet to find the manual for where it says how you're supposed to go about doing gay and lesbian relationships, and usually you don't find out that you are one until you're in one, which is a tragedy, because you tend to spend the next period of time wishing that you weren't. And going through all the steps that everybody else who is heterosexual and goes through in acceptance, we who are gay and lesbian go through acceptance stages also in accepting ourselves. And part of that is that we generally hate each other and ourselves to start out and say, oh, we did that, it was very nice, but we're never doing it again. And then, of course, we slip and do it again, and then we realize we're really in trouble. Jan and I had gotten through that phase of our coming out. I came out when I was 18. Jan,
I'm a late bloomer.
Rather later, and she'll tell you something about that. But we decided, since we were members of St. Paul Reformation and they did do blessings of relationship, that we wanted to have a service together, partially to ask for the congregation's blessing and support of our relationship, but also we wanted to thank our congregation and to thank God and to thank our families and friends for the gifts that they had already given us. So we wrote our service as a service of thanksgiving and blessing, and it was thanksgiving first and blessing second. We went through the traditional, or maybe not so traditional,
slightly altered
preparation for the blessing with the pastor. The pastors at St. Paul Ref have devised a tool using the prepare model for gay and lesbian people, and it was very interesting. We had been through miles of therapy together, and so we worked through a lot of issues before we ever got to the point of doing the pre-blessing counseling. And I think the funniest stories, and that went well. The counseling went fine, and we worked together with the pastors to prepare the service. And the really trepidation about it was not so much that we were going to do it, but what we were going to tell our families about it. And we decided that in order to give ourselves courage, we would set the date before we told anybody. And we would put some deposit money down, because as we found out in prepare, I'm very money fanatical and conservative about it, and therefore, yes, I'm also a timeline person. So if I committed cash and I committed to a date in the calendar, that meant it was a go, no matter what anybody else might say. And we weren't sure how our families were going to be. My family had been very supportive through the years, had met Jan when My parents showed up to take care of me when I was very ill, and my friends had moved me to Jan's house. It wasn't one of those romantic things. It was because I couldn't live by myself anymore. And my parents showed up the next day and stayed for 3 weeks. They didn't know that Jan and I were in relationship with each other when they arrived. They figured that out really quick. And I had been very sick for some time, and it just hadn't been an issue to talk about at that point. But that was years before, like several years before, and they had grown to love Jan and to love me and Jan as a couple. However, I wasn't sure what they were going to do when we announced that we were going to have a service of blessing. And we were very careful to call it blessing. It wasn't going to be a wedding. It was not a wedding. Just keep this straight, so to speak. So we got on the telephone, and it so happened that we reached my mother and father when my brother and sister were with them. And my brother was married, and there are no grandchildren in the family. And my parents have longed for grandchildren. At one point, my mother even said to me as we were garage sailing one day, and she was looking longingly at baby clothes, "Don't you think you could adopt?" Which I thought that was very far-reaching for her, I thought. But that was a sign that she really wanted grandchildren. Well, as luck would have it, the same day we announced the date of our service on the phone with the brother and the sister and his wife and my mom and dad, the brother and sister-in-law announced that they were also pregnant.
And guess who
the baby was due. Here we thought we were.
And you were too, you say?
No, we were too. No, oh. We were not pregnant. No. I have never been pregnant. So we had been this. I felt very elated that we were going to have a baby in the family, and also at once I was just like, should we change the date? And I looked at Jan, and we made the decision pretty much right then we were not going to change the date. We were going to go with it. And the baby was supposed to be due, like our service was the 2nd of September. Theirs, the baby was due like the 25th. So we felt there was enough leeway there. And we decided immediately that the sister-in-law would not come, but my brother would come. And he wanted to come. He was going to be there. You know, he was going to be there. My sister also said she was going to come. My mother and dad did not commit. We will have to think about it.
But your brother said...
Later on the phone, he says,
be there.
We're going to get them there. They will be there. Don't worry about it. I will see to it that we get them there. Well, they talked back and forth, and I sent out invitations broad and wide. I was tired of being in the closet in the family, so in some cases, I sent two envelopes, one inside the other, open this one first, coming out first, invitation second. I had written a thoughtful, long letter, and the invitation was very thoughtful, and I thought, this is it. You know, I don't want my parents to have to go through this alone. They should have, if there's any support to be had out there in the family, they should have it. And they'll get it. They may get some commiserating off of this, but, you know, they're going to get some kind of feedback. Well, I sent this coming out letter and the invitation and the two envelopes to my godparents, who I had never said word one to about being lesbian. And I see them very, you know, occasionally. They live in Texas. Wonderful people. And I sent them this letter, and they didn't respond to me, ever. But they called up my mother. And they said right away, nothing about the fact that I was lesbian, nothing about, you know, commiserating about that or anything. It says, of course we're coming, where are we staying? That was, let's get right to logistics, you know, we're not going to talk about it, but we're coming. Of course we're going to be there. She's our godchild, and where
that's
are we staying?
That's when Father Martha decided.
That's when they committed. So then they called up and they said, this is what Aunt Kathy says, where are we staying? And so, I was elated that they were coming. We got the hotel rooms all arranged. We had invited the entire congregation, including gay and lesbian people. There's about 25% gay and lesbian people in the congregation. And we intentionally invited even people that we knew might be on the fence on this issue a little bit, because we felt like it might be an opportunity for us to say thanks to them for hanging in with the congregation and sticking it out and maybe making it a community building event. And it was the first kind of big blessing we had in a long, long time. And no one had ever invited the His and Hers Club members, for example, who had been really negative on gay lesbian issues in the past and had said some pretty disdainful things about us being involved in the congregation in the past. But we had been working hard to build relationships with these people through various means, and so we wanted to invite them. And there's a young man in the congregation, he seems young to me. He's actually 45, but he's in his late 40s now. He's autistic, and he's high-functioning autistic. He reads, he has a dishwashing job, he can't drive, he sings in the choir. And he's just a lovely individual, and he always comes up, and his communication skills aren't too good. But he will really shake your hand a lot, and he greets you by name, and he's full of the Spirit. You can tell he just loves coming to church. Well, we sent an invitation to his mother and dad and me, because they live together. And one day, several weeks after the invitations went out, he came up to me at church. He says, Gilly, I don't know what happened. I found your invitation in the trash. I don't know how it got there. He's just as genuine as the day is long. He genuinely doesn't know how the invitation got in the trash. Well, I know how it got there. My dad from the His and Hers Club opened the invitation, says, hell no, we're not going to this, in the trash. And he rescued it. I pulled it out of the trash, and I said to Mom, I said, Mom, we're going to this. Yes, Mom, we can miss this. We can miss this. And so Mark Sandberg and his mom and dad came to the service, along with a great number of the His and Hers Club and other people that had been somewhat marginal on the issue. And we had about 200 people at the service and a similar number at the reception, which was held in an old hotel near the church. And we had adult beverages, which was the first for any event I'd been to there, and we had dancing. Well, I've been to a lot of weddings in the Midwest that have dancing. And there usually is, you know, two or three couples out on the dance floor, and there is not much dancing going on. And it's kind of a stilted affair, and the little... Well, we had decided we were going to make this one big party. a really big party. So we had fancy food, and we were footing the bill ourselves. And this was our chance to thank the congregation, so it was not only a celebration for us, but it was a celebration for them. And we wanted it to be big, and it was. It was big. We had great food, we had a good DJ, and when I announced the dancing, I said, we pay for this. We put the floor out there, there's a wood floor, we rented that. There is nobody footing this bill but us. And we want you to have a good time. So come out and dance. And we had to open up another dance floor. It was so, people were having a great time. And my Aunt Kathy and my mother, who I had never seen either of them dance before in my life, they're sitting at the back table over here. And they're, you know, chatting back and forth. And my Aunt Kathy looked up and she said to my mother, she says, you know, Martha, I don't think I've ever seen people have this much fun. And my mother, God bless her, looked over at Aunt Kathy and she says, you know, I think it's because they know they're okay just like they are. This was a conversion experience for my mother. The next day, she called her sister. Well, it was actually a day and a half later.
Yes.
We got a call at 4 o'clock in the morning, a day and a half later, and guess what was happening? The baby was coming. And my brother had made it home, but my parents were still with us. And so I arranged quickly to get them on a plane. You know, we're going to get them home and so that they can maybe be there for the birth or at least shortly thereafter. And my mother got on the phone with her sister, who is from, they're LCA, but they're from South Carolina, and she's heavy into the Republican Party and woodsman of the world, and is extremely traditional in her thinking. And I had sent the coming out letter and the invitation, and I had gotten a nice letter back that says, I can't agree with what you're doing, but I love you, and it was nice. But she hadn't come to the service. And so Mom calls Aunt Marie and says, Marie, you should have been here. This was a big thing. You should have been here. There was a spirit in the place. Now, my mom, heretofore, had no charismatic bones in her body at all. But she had felt something there that moved her to be able to say to her sister Marie, knowing how Marie is, that she should have been there. We had 25, I'm rattling on here, aren't I? We had 25 best men and women. Because we couldn't decide. And because we wanted, I mean, it was sort of a Thanksgiving to them, as well as a statement about these are our friends and family. We had our moms and dads and our brothers and sisters and Jan's children, and we had godparents. I had my godparents, and they stood around us, and we did our vows with each other. And we didn't know until we got the video and we got the book of photographs that they had made a heart around us. Which could not be, you couldn't see from the floor, but from above you could see that. And it was an experience that I would have to say was absolutely and utterly the best day of my life. And even though I went into it saying, this is a blessing, not a wedding, and it isn't making any difference, this doesn't make any difference in the level of commitment, I was wrong. I got married on that day. We're married now, and it makes a big difference, because the congregation said that they supported us as a couple, and I said in front of them and in front of my family and in front of God that I want to be with this lady for the rest of my life. And once I have said that, that's the way it's going to be. And it makes a huge difference in my life. When we have trouble, and we do, we fight. I think everybody has those times. We have disagreements. And if it's really bad, we drag out the video. And we sit down and we watch the video. And then we cry. And then we remember why we did this. And we read the sermon.
And the lessons?
And the lessons that we had picked. And then we are renewed to go on. And I think that if more gay than lesbian people had this opportunity, that what people think of as the gay lifestyle would be very different. It was a real blessing for me. I'm sorry, I can't.
Is it my turn now?
It's your turn.
My perspective going in was a little bit different. We'd been together as a couple for 7 years before we did the service. But I remember with crystal clarity the first time she said something about getting married to me. And I dumped my garbage all over it. I had been married to a man for at least before we were disentangled for almost 15 years. The last 2 years we did not live together. And I suppose in the world's terms, there was no physical abuse. I don't have a whole lot of trouble saying that I wasn't very valued in the relationship. And I think in many respects it was very traditional. And part of that is because of the way I had been raised to understand this is what you do. You find yourself a male to attach to, and you become the attachment to the male for the rest of your life and do that submissive garbage. And for me, it was very hard to separate, to understand a concept of right relationship compared to marriage when I was clearly aware of the history of it. All of the patriarchal garbage, the property stuff that went along with it, because I was going to school during this time too. So the idea of getting married, that wasn't something that was particularly attractive to me. I valued her in relationship and simply would be fine if we stayed together for the rest of our lives, because I really love her. And I really like her besides that, which I found out was something that was pretty important in a relationship. And unfortunately, I didn't have that in my marriage. I did, however, have two kids who I like quite a bit. And in fact, I get along better with their dad now than I ever have. And I think that's a valuable thing because we don't have to parent them very much anymore, because now they're 29 and 27. And now, in addition to the two children I gave birth to, we have a wonderful daughter-in-law. And we have told Chris and Jill since their wedding last June, we got to participate in that. Way more to do. But we've told them both that they can't do anything to mess up this relationship because we're keeping both of them for the rest of their lives. Kind of wish someone had talked about that sort of thing earlier in my life, but I was in a place where I didn't know who I was. And I was raised in Story City, Iowa, which you've probably never heard of it. It's right in the geographic center of the state, and if you drive through it about 30 miles an hour and blink, you can miss it. No concept of alternative orientations there whatsoever. It simply was an unknown. It was totally outside my frame of reference. But I was very much raised in the church and a person of faith. And so part of the getting married stuff was following in what I believe was the right thing to do. The marriage fell apart for a lot of really good reasons. Before I figured myself out, and that was probably a good thing, but it didn't occur to me ever to figure out who I was before I was in relationship with other. And if I were going to do counseling with kids today, getting married, that's one of the things I want to talk with them about. And I did, with my own kids. But getting back to the planning of the wedding, it was also the best day of my life. And I've had a couple of really good days, like the days my kids were born, which were pretty wonderful days. But this time, going into this service and this commitment, I was a grown-up, knowing fully who I am, what I want for my life, and very clear that God is at the center of our relationship and had been from the beginning. It was the old LCA that brought us together. You might find that amusing. The day was wonderful. My parents and family came. One of my aunts and uncles who also said, yeah, we're going to come. We don't understand. We're not sure, but you're our godchild, so we will be there, similar to Emily's godparents. And they still have reservations about whether or not it's okay. And I feel bad about that. But they were there, which says more than anything about it. The reception was wonderful. The family stayed around. We were supposed to go fishing with your parents the next day, but they had to send them off to have the baby.
Funny comment. Comments continue to come to us from the members of the congregation who were out in the narthex when the family walked out. And evidently, her dad turned to my dad.
He went out to have a cigarette right away afterwards.
Her dad turned to my dad and says, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. But they've never said anything like that to us.
No, and they probably would be embarrassed to death if we knew. Our parents are both wonderfully supportive of us as a couple. I don't think anybody quite knew what to do with the occasion, but I am glad that they were there so that we could say in front of them that we love each other and we want to spend our lives together. And we made them say that they were going to support us. Yeah.
We wrote the service so they had to say that. And they did. I got that on videotape. My mother's saying it. The bullet that it says congregation, she's going to say it. one other funny story. Yes, we'll turn it over to you guys. You
gotta go for it. We don't have anything funny to say, so.
I hate having my picture made worse than anything. I always look dorky into pictures. That's just the way it is. Has since I was like, this is self-perception. It's my feeling. Okay. So I hate to have my picture made. So we were going to have just somebody take some snapshots. And we're getting fairly close to the date, and Jan is just not happy with that idea. We should have a photographer. So we began making some calls and found out that you really need to be planning a whole lot longer than two or 3 weeks in advance to find a photographer, a portrait photographer, who's going to come in and do this. Well, we happened to find one, for those of you who know Minneapolis, he's at 50th and France, which is Edina. It's a very posh suburb of Minneapolis, and probably we spent way more money than we needed to on these photos. But we had to go in for a little pre-blessing kind of meeting with the guy.
Find the pictures.
And I said, have you ever done, we're very upfront with what this is, and if you're uncomfortable, on the phone, I said, if you're uncomfortable with this, I don't even want to come in and talk to you. And they said, oh no, come on in, we've had a cancellation, we want to fill it, come, please come. So we went in and we sat with the guy, and I said, have you ever done one of these before? And he says, no, but it's going to be fun. And I don't know, you know, which side of the fence he was on, if he was even on a side of the fence, but he made us feel comfortable. And we started, he says, he's going to show us the packages, right? What we're going to buy. You know, he's reeling up, he's showing us the books and everything, and I'm going, you know, I hate these pictures, I don't want pictures. We'll select afterwards after we see, you know. Well, guess what we got? We got the $800 leather-bound engraved book. And who picked it? That was me. And I even made them redo it once because they had the yucky pictures at the beginning. And I would have to say, for the first time in my life, I did not look like a nerd.
Let me add to that. My daughter is a cosmetologist, which is the snooty word for a hairdresser and makeup artist and nails person. And for our gift, she wanted to make us up.
Scared me to death. What, you know, you're putting posterity in somebody else's hands right there.
And we're pretty plain old here.
It was kind of a scary idea. But she came the morning of the service, the morning of the wedding, the morning of the do. And she got up to straight and just trowel. And we had more junk on our faces. I was afraid we were going to tip over when we walked.
We didn't look like Tammy Faye, though.
No. And our friends, when they got close to us, they said, "What
But it was tasteful.
It was tasteful. She said, "You're going to look beautiful in the photographs."
And we did.
And we did.
We did. All right. Yeah, okay. Thank you. We would be happy to answer questions later if you have any.
I can't follow
been
that
very entertaining.
In terms of humor, but I can talk about our service, which was, I can truthfully say, was the best day of my life as well. And one of the reasons that it was such a good day, it was really a worship service. We had our favorite music, we had a women's drum group, we had an ad hoc choir, we had our favorite poetry, our favorite liturgy, and it was really a service that we put our heart and soul into. I think what I need to do is to focus on the family, not that I'm into focus on the family, but not James Dobson anyway, but I need to focus on my family for a second to describe the difficulty that I had with, it was a bittersweet day. And the reason for that is that I come from a Missouri Synod pastor's family. And so I had not come out to my father, and I was too chicken to come out to my father. And so he never heard about it. In fact, he probably doesn't know to this day that I had a ceremony. Finally came out to him this spring, but I haven't shared that with him yet. I have a brother who's a Missouri Synod pastor, and he was not invited. He had heard about me by then. He was not, I didn't want to pour fuel on the fire, and I have a fundamentalist sister. There's six of us in the family. I have a fundamentalist sister, and she wasn't invited. But three of my siblings did come, and it was very special because I have a sister who's also a ELCA pastor, and she stood in for a surrogate father role and did the vows because my father had married the rest of my siblings. And those three sisters were very, very supportive, and that it made the day, like I said, a bittersweet day to have half of my closest family there, even while knowing that other pieces of my family were not. I have to tell you also, I think, a little bit about one sister in particular, because the day was a turning point in her life and her husband's life. I'll give you their names, Jerry and Steve. They were, after graduating from college, fundamentalist for a time, and then they settled into the Evangelical Free Church in America, which is still very conservative, okay? I had told them about myself in 1982. For about 12 years, they didn't want to talk about this. They did not want to talk about it, and I didn't force it. And in the year or so before our ceremony, which was 1996, they began to loosen up a little bit and to talk about it. And as we were planning our ceremony, I still didn't know where they stood. And I knew that I wanted to have them be my witnesses. And I was praying about it for months and saying, "God, you know, these are the people that I want to be my witnesses. And I don't know if they're going to be there for me." And I was so chicken to ask them that it was really a painful time. And so I finally, everything was set. I mean, it was 3 weeks before the service. And I finally said, "Would you stand up for me?" And they said yes. And I learned later that it was just a week prior to that, that they had said, they had decided amongst themselves that they would do whatever I asked them to do. It's a very special time. They have since left the Evangelical Free Church and have become our greatest advocates in the family. And the service was a turning point for them in that they saw the value of commitment and of placing our relationship into a context of a blessing, and not just something that they were scared of. And they saw it as a stabilizing thing. And I would use the word sacred They see that now, whereas prior to the service, they saw it as something scary, something odd. It certainly wasn't sacred to them. And the service gave it a sacred kind of effect. Do you want to talk about the service itself? Or okay, I'm gonna wrap it up here. I think that my family continues to talk about this as a turning point in the family, and I can't really describe to you the profound impact it had, because I almost think that in our lives we need to have an event. We need to have a watershed event where you can say, okay, you're going to have to either be there or you're going to have to say, no, you're not going to be there. And when they said they were going to be there, they had to ask themselves why they were going to be there and then feel okay about being there. And so it forced them to really say, yes, we're going to either put our bodies on the line or no, and to give reasons, yay or nay. And that was the turning point for them. They continue to fight with... my brother-in-law's family is still very fundamentalist, and they continue to struggle and cry and mend relationships and fight again, and it's an ongoing process for them. But that has been one of the best outgrowths of the service.
It was a very wonderful day for us. And I want to talk for a minute about the congregation in preparation for this. Since I'm on staff at the congregation, the whole congregation was invited. People knew about this, and there was this growing excitement about it, and we had decided to hold our reception in the lower auditorium, the basement of the church, and the property committee gathered up people and repainted the whole place in the month before it was to happen, and decorated it with little twinkly white Christmas lights so we didn't have to have the fluorescence on overhead. And, what I saw that evening was some of these elders of the church, some in the older group up called the Partners Club that were in their 80s instead of 60s with the His and Hers Club, sit in that church basement wide-eyed and grinning, looking at gay couples dancing together till midnight. They were kind of blown back by that, and it was a pretty wonderful experience. I didn't have the same kind of connection with family as the others on the panel about the ceremony, and didn't have any of my siblings or parents there, but had a wonderful gathering of friend family in the midst of that. And these two stood up as my best people in the midst of that, along with Jerry and Steve on your side. So it was quite a wonderful day. What we had planned next is to just open things up to conversation amongst you about what you've heard, perhaps sharing of your own experiences of such ceremonies, perhaps that you have attended, and to take the next 15 minutes or so of our conversation wherever you'd like.
The Methodist and the Presbyterian churches have both stood up as a total saying, we won't do this. Mm-hmm. How did it happen in the Lutheran church?
Mm. Well, I think we haven't taken any legal action. In fact, at the synod assemblies this spring is the first time any synods have asked for some recognition of blessing of relationships, came out of Southeast Michigan and also Milwaukee area synods asking for and calling for our church around that. There was a statement from our conference of bishops in the early 90s saying that they didn't see any biblical precedent for doing such ceremonies, but they left a sort of clause in there that a pastor could, for the good of their own continuance within a community, perhaps might do such a ceremony. I do know in the Methodist setting that a year ago there was a commitment ceremony for a couple who were in their, a lesbian couple in their 60s. I think there were over 75 Methodist pastors who presided at that together in California, and they decided not to act to remove 75. So, interesting piece that was in.
They just denied it in their assembly. So it's been a whole, in fact, that one of the Methodist pastors is going to be on the line because it's going to be tested in September in Tacoma to actually have a marriage. And another Presbyterian pastor that I've been had relations with is essentially in the process of dealing with the gay and lesbians within his congregation. They had a a dissociation of a marriage. That's not the right term they use.
Dissolution?
Dissolution, where a gay man said, I can no longer be married after 35 years. And his wife is a very strong advocate in the gay lesbian community, which plays the organ for the services there. So it's a really interesting situation. But that pastor felt that there was such a struggle in his congregation that he has resigned and is starting another kind of mission for gay and lesbians, etc., in Boise.
Interesting. One of the things that's very interesting is that James Wall, editor of Christian Century, recently wrote a little page suggesting that maybe what should happen in the Methodist Church in particular is that lay people should preside at gay and lesbian ceremonies, because it is unlikely that the Methodist Church will discipline and or kick out a lay person, whereas a clergy person, they can press charges or bring charges. Now, this senior editor of the Christian Century, I've watched James Wall for years and read him, and I thought, my gosh, you know, for him to make that suggestion, well, perhaps you get around the rule by you just circumvent it.
Yeah. And he also suggested it in a Methodist setting, if you wanted to do one, to get as many clergy to participate as you could rather than just one at a time.
Because you couldn't kick out that many.
Yes.
Anyone can become a pastor with the Universal Life Church. In fact, I've got one for a birthday present, I think. And that could be done, and that would be all that would be to that.
It would possibly be
legal.
Right, that's a possibility. Yeah. What's missing for me in that scenario that you provide is the sense of community surrounding a couple, a community that you worship with regularly, because that wouldn't provide that peace.
He could be a member of your church. Give me a member of your church. You could,
it's like writing away for a PhD.
I think it's $15 or whatever it costs. Were you legally married?
No, you can't be legally married.
Well, you could in Washington for a while.
It's my understanding that in the United States, there's not a place where one can.
Huh?
In the United States, there is no state where one can be legally married.
Only it was for a while in Washington until the governor put an end to it. Okay. It was done in Central Lutheran Church in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's mentioning Vermont. That's not marriage. That's a
well, maybe I'm sure that that was it was between two men.
Interesting. Are there other questions?
Are any of you ordained?
No.
So that didn't come into. I mean, it didn't jeopardize your work or anything.
Well, actually, I have been in process with the ELCA for some years about that very question. But because of our relationship with each other, I've been denied opportunity to proceed through the candidacy process toward that end. Even though since 1994, our congregation has asked me to serve in a pastoral capacity with our ordained pastor, and our bishop has granted a special dispensation, if you will, to celebrate communion, to preach and to teach and to serve pastorally in that place, but sans ordination. So there's still a second classness about that. In fact, in my application to Luther Seminary in St. Paul, I was denied entrance even to get a divinity degree there because of our committed relationship, which is problematic in my eyes. But
it's in mine, too.
One of the challenges for gay and lesbian people in a relationship is that there's what do you celebrate? I mean, if there is no event or occasion like this, how do you acknowledge the length of time together? Well, what, you know, is it first date? Is it first kiss? Is that the other first occasion? Or is it, what do you do and what do you celebrate? Well, you can still do all of that, but now we have one that we can celebrate out loud in front of other people. In fact, it's published. We do birthdays and anniversaries in our Sunday church bulletin, and all of those folks having birthdays or anniversaries are prayers of the church. That's significant. And in our congregation, we have pictures, pictorial directories, you know, that y'all have to go through once in a while. And we have several gay and lesbian couples who are pictured as couples.
Families as well.
That's right.
I'm recalling that was a bit awkward for the company that came in to do the pictorial directory in the early 80s, but it's not a problem any longer. And they figured out how to list the couples by both sets of last names and that sort of thing. So
there's no paperwork on this, then.
I'm sorry, I'm misunderstanding your question.
There's no paperwork, I mean, there's no marriage certificate or anything.
No, it's not. There is no legal marriage for same-gender couple in the United States of America.
Yet.
The closest approximation that there is only available for residents of the state of Vermont, and that's a civil union that allows the possibility for inheritance things to pass from one to another. And for insurance and other things such as that.
I guess I have a question. Yes. Do any of your four have regrets about not coming out sooner or denying the way you felt at an earlier age?
For me, I've been pretty public about this since I first realized it for myself, which was in 1974-75. And it was my coming out experience that brought me to the Lutheran Church and helped me become a faithful Christian in my adult life. Mm-hmm. So it's the things are pretty wrapped up with one another. So for me, it has been a matter of being pretty out. Now, Janelle has a good story about that.
Yeah.
Just talked to her father after 18 years of silence.
Mm-hmm. I waited 18 years to talk to my father, and I don't know if we're going to recover. Mm-hmm. I will take my part of the responsibility in isolating myself from him. And he, I think, has some responsibility in his theological position that precluded me from doing that. But we're Mars and Venus is how you describe our lives. He's 85. He's a retired Missouri Synod pastor. And, you know, we're working at it. But I have huge regrets that I was too timid to do that. I had not a good experience with talking with my brother, who is also Missouri Synod pastor, and I thought, I just don't want to deal with this. And it affected the family relationship, not only my relationship with my father. There's kind of, you know, walking on eggshells within my family, and things now are so different between my siblings and my father. They're starting to talk about this, that my sister called me up crying one day and said, I feel so close to Dad because of this conversation. She's helping him struggle through it. And so it's a real kind of spiritual renewal in my family going on now that I wish could have happened 15 years ago. It could have happened, and it didn't.
It caused some awkward moments when he would come to visit. I remember driving him back out to Eden one evening to her other sister's house, and he was pumping me for information about who Janelle was dating. And trying to figure out how to do that, and sort of living the lie of that in some senses. And you know, suddenly for 7 years I'm at every family function, and he just thought, well, you know, your family's so far away in Mississippi, and isn't it? He's always in awe that I have worked with people who have AIDS. He always asks me about that every time we get together, and this kind of little awkwardness is about it. Last year was the first time I went to the Bussert family reunion, and one of Chanel's sisters, who lives in Missouri and is the most conservative of this batch, had said, well, when I host it at my house, you can't come there. But since it's going to be held at a Missouri Synod camp, that's neutral territory, so you can come. I'm like, neutral to who? So that was my first entrance, was a week at a Missouri Synod camp with the Bussert family. And we, in fact, leave here next Thursday, a week from now, to go to the next Bussert event in Detroit.
First one where everybody will be aware.
So. Right, including your dad. So it feels like things are shifting within that family constellation. Good question. Where do you wish you had been?
I was glad that I didn't come out any earlier. I mean,
were you 18?
I was 18 and freshman in college. And my parents suspected right off the bat, and they threatened to pull me out of college and wanted to take me to a psychiatrist. And so I lied. I lied for 4 years to them. And so when it was finally made known to them, I was outed in my first year of seminary. And with my uncle being the bishop, that kind of finished it. They really had a bad reaction. And I'm glad I didn't come out any earlier, because if I had, I think they would have pulled me out of college. I would have gone into psychotherapy to try to be changed. Mm-hmm. And that would not have been a good thing. So I did it out. I lied out of self-preservation. Somehow I knew it was the right thing to do. I paid in a little way later, because when they found out, it was bad. It was really bad. And
they have come a long way.
Yeah, it took about 10 years for them. I mean, the first year they would see me, but they would not see my partner for that time. And my partner and I had lived with them for a summer, and they loved her. They still love her. I mean, she's part of the family and always will be. And it took 10 years to work back, but they've come a long way. It's wonderful now. It's very ugly. I would have to say that because of that journey that my parents went through with me, that we have a fundamentally different relationship than my parents have with the other siblings. Yeah, I wrote a letter for the Week's Ministry Committee last year for our end of the year thing, and I talked about it as if I had been dancing around for years at, like a turkey in a cow suit at Thanksgiving, sure that they would figure out that there was really a turkey in there and that I'd be dinner. And it was at Thanksgiving, in fact, when this whole coming out thing happened. I felt like I was being met for dinner. They said some pretty hideous things to me. My father actually said that he thought that homosexuality was the most heinous sin that there was. And I said, "Do you mean even worse than murder?" And he said, "Yes." So that was our starting place. And but in my letter, I said, you know, I think on that day, we took off our cow suits collectively, and we saw that we were all turkeys, and we've never put them on again. And I think with my other siblings, they still have their cow suits on. The siblings have theirs on, and my parents have theirs on, and so they don't really get down to what's underneath the costume.
We go on vacation with her folks.
On
we
purpose.
Have a lot of fun with them.
Yeah, on purpose.
I was going to ask you, I don't know much about this kind of a relationship,
yes.
But is one a man, the other one a woman?
No, sir.
We're both women.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah,
I've heard that.
That's
a really good question.
And for many years, there was in both the gay and lesbian communities, there was a time when people played roles. Then there
was maybe
in the
1930s to the 50s.
30s to the 50s, where they would, because that's the only model we had, you would take on a role and you would be one or the other. And they're even dressed the part. If you see film archives or documentaries, The Word Is Out, for example, and watch that documentary, there are some people from that era that talk about that time period. Now, with the age of feminism, I think we have much more equal relationship of equals, and you might look at us and say, okay, well, that one's a little more masculine than the other one. But as far as, you know, I may take out the trash, but she
might too.
But she might too, or she starts the lawnmower better than I do, or that kind of thing. It's not, we're not divided up into stereotypical male-female roles.
Yeah, when I get to heaven, that's the first thing I'm going to ask God. Who is it that decided that this, you know, these things are gender specific, that one person is genetically predisposed to change oil in machines and the other one is genetically predisposed to do dishes?
And I chuckle about this because it's like, I'm like probably more identifiable for people to look at me and think, well, she must be one. And Janelle less that way. I said, here, I'm the one who looks the butch part, but I'm the one who does the cooking, cleaning, and stuff. And she can't stand it. So it's like, okay.
And Janelle was like Julie Andrews. Question about regrets and for earlier in life. I was married and I have children, and
I don't think I think I choose not to regret any of that, partly because I learned a great deal about myself, and I have children that are, that's a blessing. At the same time, I wish that she and I could have raised children together, and I can't tell you, now I will cry.
We're going to have grandchildren.
That's right, grandchildren.
When the wedding for her son, and we've had our go-rounds with the kids, oh boy. They both turned out, they went through a period of being agnostics, and now they're fundies. Both of them. And it's just, oh boy.
I think they've kind of put it on. I don't think that they've thoroughly...
We challenge them, yeah. Needless to say. But
we ask them hard questions.
But Chris is the son, and Jill is the daughter-in-law now. And Jill has been a wonderful stabilizing factor in this whole discussion because she has a gay uncle. And her mother's brother is gay, and she loves this man and is very close to him. And so when it came time for this, for the wedding, we got very involved in helping them with the planning for the wedding. And went out, and we do some food service cooking kind of thing, so we went out and helped them with the caterer and, you know, that kind of stuff. And we got to the point where we were doing the dress rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And I got the bulletin, and I opened it, and lo and behold, they listed the parents, and I was on the list. Wow. I had to have a little tear right there. And we went through this whole rehearsal thing, and they got to the point where it says, and there's an instructions, and the parents stand. And the pastor says, will the parents stand? And like a shot, I was out of my seat. I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about it. I was out of my seat, standing up just as proud as I could be. I mean proud.
And the congregation was probably very confused because there were
so many moms. Way too many moms. And this year, the kids...
There were eight of us this time.
The kids took us out for Mother's Day. This is a first. They called us up. They said they wanted to make a plan for Mother's Day. I'm sure this is Jill. This is Jill's influence now. We got to go out for Mother's Day. And they got us cards. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I was some kind of touched. And her daughter, who's been the slowest to come around on this, 3 weeks ago, introduced me to a client of hers at the salon as her other mom. And you could have wiped me off the floor. She got a big tip that day.
I had a question. After the ceremonies, how did that impact the congregation that you were a part of? And also, have there been more ceremonies to follow? I thank you for being kind. There's a lot of us that can support, but somebody's got to be out there taking the heat in the front. And I thank you for being that.
There have been other ceremonies. It's not all women who have ceremonies at our church either. Right. Let me get that said, because it just happens to be who's here this week talking about it. And I don't know, one of those places I would point to about the response of people to us, I mean, people acknowledge our anniversary, which is a lovely thing. Both of my parents have died in the last 2 years, and people's responses to write to both of us about that grief process has been very moving to me.
We have some of these his and hers couples, I'm thinking the Heipels in particular. Bill Heipel is a short man. He's about my height. And we have had some, since our service, there are two catalyzing events, our service, and then we did our retirement dinner for the church secretary. And we got involved in a bunch of the lesbians in the community, in the church, in the congregation, got involved with helping prepare that meal and doing the cooking. Well, Bill Heipel came back and he saw me running the dishwasher. and I was hauling the big trays and stuff. Well, evidently there had been no woman heretofore ever run the dishwasher at that congregation. And he watched me work, and obviously this is a big deal for him, the working, that I can really work. And he and his wife came to that, to the service. And from here on, now, he comes up to me, and his way of showing approval and that he likes you is he hits you. I'm sure it's kind of a guy thing. I think he's kind of, he doesn't quite know the gender thing. It's kind of a little weird for him, but he comes up and he hits me every time. And interestingly enough, we've heard some interesting stories about him. This man was denied being a Boy Scout leader because he was too short.
So with this latest Boy Scout thing, he's right there with us.
He can make the leap into what's happening with us because it happened to him. And that's a discussion that we would have never had years before. The congregation is very different now in the last probably five years. It has materially changed so that now that we're discussing ordination for Anita, which is what's on our plate for the year 2000, we've had forums, lots and lots of forums after church, lunch things. And we've had, you know, large gatherings of people. And it's coming from that little group that say, I want my pastor, meaning her, to be ordained. And they can't understand. It doesn't jive with them anymore.
She is our pastor.
Yeah.
And the rest doesn't matter.
Right. What's interesting to me is to watch the growth spurt that this congregation has been in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm. What's the size of your congregation?
It's about, well, good question, about 400 people, I think.
We took in,
we received over 50 new members in 1 year. Just in the last 2 years, and it looks like we're on that same road again this time. There's a sense of excitement about what's happening there. While there are many gay and lesbian people that join that congregation, there are also families with young children coming, saying we want our children in the most diverse place we can have them be. It's a racially diverse congregation, as well as having the difference mix that has to do with sexual orientation. And in some ways, I think it was the congregation's having worked its way through racial difference that opened people's hearts and minds to deal with sexual orientation difference. Well, friends, we've gone past our time period. We'll be back to talk again tomorrow. Come and see. Thank you so much for being with us.